for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. You may press star one if you'd like to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Ken Frank. Thank you. You may begin.
Hi. Thank you very much, Gabrielle. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Night Sky Network's first of our 2011 bimonthly teleconferences. And this one's entitled Outreach You Can Do to Promote Dark Sky Awareness Globe at Night. And we're pleased to have Dr. Connie Walker with us as our speaker this evening. We also have the pleasure of having our Night Sky Network co-conspirator, Jessica Satiskoy, who is our Astronomy Outreach Project Coordinator, who'll be listening in along with you and monitoring Night Sky Info. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, everyone. I hope everyone's doing really well tonight, and I want to thank you all for joining us on Facebook, and we also hope you've gotten a chance to see the new Growing Your Club video series. So thanks again, and I'll turn it back over to you, Ken.
Thanks. Gabrielle, would you mind opening up the lines and having people say hi if they'd like to? Gabrielle, are you there?
You'd have to press star one.
Oh, star one. Okay. Usually there's somebody monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? We'll just go on from here. But I do see that Kay Ferrari is on the line from JPL. Hey, Kay. And we've got a bunch of other folks all the way from the East Coast down to Florida. So with that, that we've done some of the introductions. Dr. Connie Walker, who's an astronomer and a senior science education specialist at the National Optical Astronomy Observatory in Tucson, Arizona, the director of Globe at Night campaign, the chair of the International Dark Sky Association Education Committee. She's also chair of the IOAA 2009 Dark Sky Awareness Cornerstone Project that you all remember. And she's also a member of the board of the Astronomical Society of the Pacific. And you've probably been lucky enough to attend one of her Globe at Night presentations. And I know we have a number of new club members out there, so this will be especially important to you. Connie's enthusiasm and advocacy for dark sky preservation is catching, and she's a full-time soccer mom and unfortunately is powering through a bad cold. We're passing some good Greek avoglimono soup to her right now. Connie and the NOAO were generous to the Night Sky Network Club members by making available 5 dark sky kits, including a new sky quality meter. And the requirement for you guys to receive the kits and the SQM is that you post your upcoming Globe at Night event on the Night Sky Network calendar, hold your event, and then log it. And there'll be drawings held after each event with 2 chances of winning. So actually, she's going to be giving away 10 kits and 10 SQMs. So the first one is February 21st to March 6th, and also from March 22nd to April 4th for us here in the Northern Hemisphere. So good luck to all of you, and without further ado to our telecon audience, we'd like to present Dr. Connie Walker.
Well, thank you very much, Ken, and it's a pleasure to be here. I think this is our third, is it our third year, Ken, doing this?
Pardon me?
Is it our third year?
Yeah,
I think so.
Well,
good evening, everybody in the Night Sky Network. I'm delighted to be here, and I'd love to talk to you tonight about outreach you can do to promote dark skies awareness, namely using the Globe at Night campaign. And now I'm on slide 2. I come from the National Optical Astronomy Observatory, and here are 2 of the sites that are part of our observatory. And the program Globe at Night actually began amongst both of these sites, amongst the communities that surround Cerro Tololo, Inter-American Observatory, and the communities near Chidpeak National Observatory. As you might imagine, these observatories are immensely interested in the issues surrounding light pollution. Going to slide 3 here, you can see that a typical picture that you've probably encountered a few, 100 times before? I don't know. But it just sums up. It's one of these pictures that say 1,000 words. It sums up how detrimental and how global the problem of light pollution really is. And what we're really going to discuss tonight is how it's up to the individual to actually help with solving this problem, and that we all can make a difference. One of the things that really concerns organizations like the International Dark Sky Association is how this light, this upward-directed light, is just wasted and never to be used on Earth. So this wasted energy, this artificial night sky brightness, is such an effect that one-third of all outdoor lighting actually escapes into space. And under a normal sky, we should see about 5,000 stars. But we can only see a few hundred usually from suburban areas. And 6 out of every 10 people in the United States, that's a large ratio, but 6 out of every 10 have never lived in a spot in the United States where they could actually see a pristinely dark sky. So the question actually is this something we really, is this the kind of heritage we really want to leave our children? And of course, I'm talking to the choir here, I'm preaching to the choir. The answer obviously is no, we don't want to leave this kind of heritage to our children. We want to be able to do something about it. And so one thing that we try to teach the young children is actually how to light responsibly. And so what I'd like to talk to you about tonight is some of the ways we can do that. This next slide here is, again, probably a slide you might have seen before, but I can't think of too much of a better way to really get across the idea how fast the problem of light pollution is actually growing. And this data came from a satellite called the Defense Meteorological Satellite Program. It's one of these NOAA satellites that took most of its data from the 1990s up through the present day. And there's a group that took this data and modeled it so it would go back to the late 50s. You could see only a few cities, primarily in the northeastern part of the U.S., affected by light pollution. And then then it gets, as the decades increase, you could see the increase in light pollution levels until the late 90s, when the eastern half of the United States is fairly well sucked in by light pollution. And what is troublesome is when they project this forward, when my kids will be having their kids, the only pristinely dark sky places will be the national parks. And this is a worrisome thought. So, what can we do about this? I'm now on slide 5, and I want to present some questions to consider, because I know a number of you as astronomers go out to the public and you do star parties and you interact with the public, and many of you probably already try to convince them of the detriment of light pollution and try to get them to somehow abate light pollution, I'm sure, in some simple way. You can't really combat them over the head. But you can try to say, consider how do you actually explain to them? I mean, this is the interesting thing. How can you convince them that this issue is important, that they've lost something beautiful about the night sky to artificial sky glow? And so how can you make them aware that light pollution is a concern on many fronts, not just the ability to see the stars, but in issues of energy conservation and health and wildlife, all sorts of issues? And when after you consider that, how do you get them, even though they're now aware of the issues, how do you actually get them to take steps, even small steps, in order to redress this issue? And so what we try to do at the National Optical Astronomy Observatory has come up with various kind of turnkey activities that you could just pull off the shelf and do. And so in the case of light pollution education at our observatory, we try to first come up with a campaign of awareness on light pollution issues, namely Globe at Night, and then to come up with some activities to do with primarily children, but this all goes up all the way into college sometimes, some activities called Dark Skies Rangers. Excuse me. So Globe at Night itself is basically simply a citizen science campaign, a very, very easy citizen science campaign to participate in. And what it does is ask people to record the night sky brightness by matching its appearance to the constellation in question. And for the first campaign, it's Orion. And for the second campaign, we'll be using Leo. It's a little later in the year, so Orion's not really that high in the sky. So you try to figure out which star map you want to choose from limiting magnitude 1 to 7. And then you submit your measurements online, and then a few weeks later, a world map results with light pollution levels from usually the 100 countries that participate. And over the last 5 years or so, we've accumulated over 52,000 measurements. Okay, so the Globe at Night program itself, if you go to slide 6, it's basically just a 5-step program. On the website itself at www.globeatnight.org, there's a bunch of background information on key concepts like limiting magnitudes. There's very fun interactive games to play. There are interactive tools like the one at the bottom there, the picture at the bottom right, which you can tweak the latitude and see the orientation of Orion change with latitude, and also tweak the light pollution level, which shows you either a few stars or a lot of stars, depending if you're in the city or out in a national park. We also have a bunch of quizzes to check proficiency to test to see if you know the various limiting magnitudes, what they look like on, you know, these charts that we show online. And we also have family guides and teacher guides in various different languages, postcards and whatnot, a report page, and then the page with the map and the data. On slide 9, we have examples of these limiting magnitude charts for Orion. I'll be darned if I can tell you the difference between chart 6 and 7, though. But that gives you an idea. And then if you are a person like myself who would rather have a little bit more technically accurate measurements, we use an approach that uses sky quality meters, and these are basically sky brightness meters that measure the magnitude per square arc second, which is basically a brightness per area. And you'll see that you just click on that start button when you're holding the meter just above your head, away from any obstacles or lights. And it's very easy to use. It has a field of view of about plus or minus 10 degrees. And they're made by Unihedron. The website is unihedron.com, excuse me. And they're about $135. So we're hoping that people will use more and more of those and contribute that, too, on the Globe at Night website on the report form during the campaigns. This year we have some exciting news, and I really am very excited about this. We've tried to make it easier for people to actually submit their measurements, and so we've made a web application that you can use from just about any smart cell phone or a smart tablet or pad. And, of course, we already have it available on the desktop and laptop as well. And it makes life easier in the sense that if you are taking the data and you want to submit your measurements right away, you just take out your cell phone and you go to the web app, which I'll tell you by the end of the presentation, and immediately it'll know where you are, so you don't even have to put in your latitude and longitude. But if you still want to tweak it, there's a map there, and you can move the little push pin around to where you know you're located if you're not satisfied. Or if you want to put in your address, you have that option. Or if you want to input your latitude and longitude yourself, you have that option. And you can even put in a commonplace name. It does all the above. And it does it, too, on the tablet, the pad, the desktop, the laptop, you name it. So it'll know your location. It'll also know your date and time. And you can tweak that as well if you want to. Now, since it does know your location, your date and time, it knows how to automatically orient Orion, which is an amazing thing, I think. And so you have this picture of what Orion should look like, the orientation, and below it you'll have these little seven little thumbnails, and you'll pick the thumbnail that corresponds to the limiting magnitude that you see. And it'll just change the picture, the big picture, that's above the thumbnails. So once you're satisfied with that and you input the cloud cover, there's four different choices there, and if you have the SQM data, you just submit it and you're done. And it'll take, 30 seconds? It's pretty amazing. So that's the news for this year in terms of submitting your data. So the website will still take in the same information as before, but it'll be easier. And then, of course, the measurements you take, you can get later on. You can get everybody else's measurements if you so like, because we have this page with the map on it. I believe the page is called analyze.html for whatever historical reason, but on it you'll have the data in six different formats. You have it either in text format, which is one of the more simple formats, or you can have it in Excel, or even Google, which is one of my favorites because literally I just click on the data set when it's on my desktop, and because I have Google Earth already set up on my computer, it automatically opens Google Earth with the data set on the globe, and you can just zoom in and play with the data at your heart's content. And I'll tell you something, I get addicted very, very easily to this. And then you can zoom around the world looking at light pollution levels. Now I'm going to be on slide 13. We had a number of interested educators, from teachers to museum people to nature centers to whatnot, who asked the question, Globonite's great, but what if we wanted to teach, various activities to our students? Do you have anything you can offer? So the last couple of years, we've been working on a suite of activities called Dark Skies Rangers Activities. And we already had the light shielding demonstration, which I'll talk about in a minute, which actually lays the foundation for the vocabulary that students and some adults need to know in terms of what light pollution is and how to light responsibly. In addition to that, we developed a school outdoor lighting audit, which is just a one-page worksheet, basically, that gets the kids calculating how much energy is used when they do a survey of at least one building, taking down the number of lights, the wattages, and whatnot, and asking the school for certain information that allows them to calculate the energy, allows them to calculate the cost, and allows them to calculate the carbon footprint. And then we have them do a mind game where they would replace these things with energy-efficient bulbs, maybe turn some off, have less hours during the year, and recalculate those calculations and then take the difference. And they understand how much energy, how much money, and how much carbon footprint they could actually save if they reduced their consumption. We have something called the Student Symposium, which just gets kids interviewing people of different professions to see how light pollution affects those professions, and they end up doing a video on their research. We have a turtle hatching activity that gets the kids role-playing sea turtles hatching and the effects that light pollution can have on those sea turtles from businesses and streetlights surrounding the beach, and they find out just how many sea turtles get back into the ocean. We have another wildlife activity that uses flypaper around lights, and I'll leave that one to your imagination. We also have an activity that teaches kids exactly what we mean by stellar magnitudes. And if you've ever tried to teach students and maybe some people about what a stellar magnitude actually is, it's not an easy concept. So we have some inkjet transparencies, which are rough. We layer them with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 layers on various circles on a piece of index paper, and you can actually use them to delineate limiting magnitude 1 through 5 stars in the sky. If you can find out more about that on that website there at the top of the page. We have a puffy paint, glow-in-the-dark puffy paint template. We have the kids use puffy paints to trace the templates onto a clear transparency. It dries. You put it under UV light, hold it up at arm's length towards the constellation, and voila, the kids can visualize the constellation. And, of course, hopefully all of this helps to culminate their participation in the Globe at Night campaign. So the next slide, slide 14, shows you some happy kids. We work with a nearby environmental center at the edge of Tucson, and every week we're going out there a couple of times and engaging these activities with about 50 kids at a time in the early evening, and they truly do have fun. And I hope they learn a lot. We also do a bunch of teacher workshops, typically, and we give out kits like the ones you'll be receiving if you win the raffle, and the kids have all these materials on slide 15, including the light shielding demo and the sky quality meter. And then on slide 16 is sort of a pictorial demonstration of how effective the light shielding demonstration can be. I've had this in front of members of the International Dark Sky Association who have actually oohed and aahed in disbelief as to how well this demonstration works. So I advocate if you get the kit or if you want to make it yourself, I'll let you know what's in the shielding demo. Just give me an email, and it's very easy with a couple of mag lights and a shield. And actually, it doesn't show there, but we have this very high technology portable planetarium, which is basically a box with a bunch of holes in it, and we use that to illuminate stars on a ceiling, and you can see them better, of course, when the sky is dark, when the lights are light is facing down, basically shielded. So there you go. And you could talk about all the vocabulary from glare to everything else with this particular demonstration. And we also get into different types of lamps when we talk with the public and with children. So, of course, this is slide 17, and incandescent lights are the worst of all culprits, basically. They have over 90% of their light as heat instead of light, I should say, 90% of their energy as heat. And the fluorescent lights, although, are about 3 to 4 times more efficient than the incandescent lights. And the light-emitting diodes are an up-and-coming technology, or promising. However, you know, as from astronomers' point of view, there's still a lot of white light there, a lot of short wavelengths that are still having research done on these particular types of light lamps, because they don't know quite the effects of the short wavelengths on, well, they're still learning the effects of the short wavelengths on human health and that of animals. And also the cost is still relatively high, but it's getting better. It's going to be better in another few years. And then there's high-intensity discharge tubes. They come in different flavors. There's, of course, the high-pressure sodium and the mercury vapor and the metal halides. And the low-pressure sodium is also pretty much considered a high-intensity discharge lamp of sorts, but it has some, you know, additional unique characteristics to it. It is considered at this point still the most efficient form of artificial lighting to the IDA. It does maintain its light output better than other lamps. It is an older technology, though, and there's only, like, I don't know, one manufacturer left in Scotland or something. I can't quite remember. But it does produce a high number of lumens per watt, which could be considered a good thing. So it's like 200 lumens per watt compared to other, even other high-intensity discharge lights. I'm getting ahead of myself here. We also try to give realistic descriptions of situations in, I should say, real life, where on slide 18 here you have, you know, one shot towards two parks, one that's well shielded and the other that is not. And the question we just give our public usually is, which one would you rather live near? So what I'm trying to say here is these are all the avenues you as astronomers could take with the public when you're talking with the public, doing outreach with the public. Feel free to use any part of this presentation. Feel free to go off on tangents with this presentation. Use it to your heart's content if you'd like, or not at all, whichever you like. But there are some really good turn-off points with a lot of these pictures I'm showing now. This very next slide here I like a lot, because this one community in Chile made a very big effort to retrofit all of their luminaires and did a heck of a good job. And I don't know how much their bills went down, but you can tell it's improved. So communities can do a lot, and they have done a lot, actually. Here we have a summary on page 20 of the ways people can light responsibly. I mean, we've talked about shining a light down, that is, shielding the lights, and thereby also not seeing the glare. Light only when and where needed. You know, be task-oriented. Do not overlight. And then try to use energy-efficient sources. And those are the types of ideas you want to leave your public with. And if you get a chance, if you feel that they're interested, you can put names to all these types of light pollution issues. You know, a lot of people already know what light trespass is. They do probably have that as part of their problems in their area, in their neighborhoods. And then they have SkyGlow. I could talk about SkyGlow. SkyGlow, in terms of, well, astronomers' worst enemy, namely light shining off of particles in the atmosphere, creating a haze. And, of course, we already talked about glare. And I love this picture because I, for one, cannot see that sign at that intersection there due to the background lights of the playing field. Okay, trying to advance. And on slide 22, if you have the time to talk to the public about this, it's a very intriguing area. Besides astronomical research and energy, which we've talked about a bit, we also have the issues of human health and the effects on wildlife. Now, I love showing this picture in terms of the car sales lot, because, for one, that picture there, any thief could steal a car without being seen. And that particular car sales lot owner does feel that he's safely protecting his cars. I kind of beg to differ, though. He could light more efficiently, right? Well, we also have issues of human health, and there's a lot of studies going on now. There's at least three that I know of that have to do with issues of breast cancer on the rise with more lights at night. There are now even issues with monitors being on at night. There's issues with night shift workers. There's disruption in circadian rhythms, sleep disorders, all sorts of things that they're studying now. And even, believe it or not, the tables are actually turned. There are now issues of where the light pollution itself affects the chemistry in the atmosphere and causes light pollution, smog, not to be broken down as much as usual because nitrate oxide or something? No, nitrate radical, I believe, that doesn't really effectively break smog down when sunlight hits it. So it has to be done at night, but if there's light pollution, it slows by at least, 7% or so. I know you think that's low, but it's only going to get worse if we don't do something about it. There's various issues like that at hand that are just immensely interesting, and we can all do something about it. But what touches the hearts of children and teachers are the issues of wildlife. And like I mentioned about the sea turtles not getting back into the ocean because they're attracted by lights on shore or migrating birds, effects on owls, salamanders, frogs, insects, you name it. I mean, there's just a bunch of species out there that are very, very, very affected by man-made or person-made light pollution. And if you haven't ever read his book, or their book, I should say, Travis Longcore and Catherine Rich, they have a very wonderful book on ecology and the effects of light pollution on ecology. I can't remember the exact title. Maybe Ken can look that up while we're talking here. But it's it has some really good articles in it. So just to say a little bit on the data that we have, I'm actually looking for partners in crime to start various areas of study, simple studies, not anything too heavy. But we have this 5 years' worth of data and soon to have 6 years' worth of data. And you want to be able to look at changes and trends over time with the different years. If possible, maybe even the different hours during a night, seasonal variations, whatever, or variations with population density, if you're looking for dark sky oases, if you want to monitor ordinance compliance with certain big box companies, or the effects of, as we already talked about, on animals or plants, health, energy consumption, whatever it might be, I'm looking for partners in crime in that area. And there are some shining stars, no pun intended here, or maybe pun is intended, I guess. There's some shining stars in our community and in the U.S. here who have done a lot with the Globe at Night data, and I just wanted to mention a couple. There's a group of elementary and middle school kids who took 20% of all of the Globe at Night measurements 2 years ago. They took 3,400 data points, and actually it was 3,400 times 7. They averaged them, and then they made a map. But they didn't stop there. They asked the question, how much of the night sky have they already lost? And to visualize it, they made a Lego map. 35,000 Legos. If you can imagine 6 layers deep, each layer representing a limiting magnitude of a different color of Lego, and they ended up, to match their Globe at Night map, they took away 12,000. And they came up with basically limiting magnitudes of 3 and 4 mostly, which you can see is yellow and green on that map. And they figured out from a limiting magnitude 6 sky, they lost nine times, their sky was 9 times worse than a limiting magnitude 6 sky. I thought that was pretty brilliant. And then, of course, there's two different high schools and some amateur astronomers in the city of Norman, Oklahoma, who wanted to change their city lighting ordinances, and so they did a grid map of certain areas of their city they were interested in monitoring, and they took 475 SQM data points as well as 475 visual data points, and they came up with this map here. And, of course, I should be saying that in our Globe at Night maps, the darker the dot, the darker the sky. And you can see where their stadium was there in the middle of the map there, the university stadium. This past summer, a college student did research with me on the lesser long-nosed bat. And you can imagine how many heads turned at our recent American Astronomical Society meeting when he presented this data. They would pass by the poster, and they could not pronounce the huge, long name of this bat in Latin. It was really very comical, but the presentation, the poster, was very, very, very good. And he had put together a map of 2,500 data points from the visual data and 500 SQM data points for the area of Tucson. And again, the brighter the dot, the brighter the sky. Excuse me. And he made a contour map of it that you could see on number 27. And that contour map was the Tucson area again. The mountains are the Coronado National Forest mountains to the north, and to the east you have the Saguaro National Park. And the reason that area is blocked off is because we're not allowed to show you the roosting areas of the lesser long-nosed bat. But on top of this map, on slide 28, you can see that the routes of the bats were shown. They followed a dark sky corridor to the north of Tucson, and the route that they would take from roost to foraging area was 30 kilometers across town from the east to the west there. So the question was, should the Arizona Game and Fish Department protect this dark sky corridor or not? And we're still resolving that issue. Just to show you that that is a darker area of Tucson, the pink area that is underneath the routes is actually an area where it's more restrictive in terms of the amount of lumens you can have per acre. And I actually live in that area. Well, here we are closing our presentation here. And I just wanted to show you the look toward the future that we have. We had on our agenda just a few months ago, actually, trying to build an online community. We started doing so with Facebook and Twitter. We're hoping in the future to do some more sort of like a way of communicating on the website, but we'll figure that out a little later. We have some tutorials for the Dark Sky Rangers activities already done. They'll be put online in another month or so. Excuse me. And there's a website application that I've told you about for the mobile devices, and I'd like your help in testing that application, and I'll tell you about that. I think it's two slides from now. And then we are trying to have actually a campaign each and every month. That's one of our news items as well. We are, of course, starting this year with two campaigns rather than just one campaign. And, of course, the future, what we'd like to do is develop a user-friendly tool online for analysis of the globe at night data. And we're starting to work with the World Wide Web and people that are associated with WGBH in a program called the World Wide Telescope. I'm sorry, not World Wide Web, World Wide Telescope Ambassadors Program. And we'll be doing some testing here in Tucson, as well as the half a dozen other cities across the U.S. Let me see. So now I have a request, and the request is how you might, if you so choose, how you might help the Globe at Night campaign. And so I set up sort of a magnitude system where you go from bright to faint magnitudes, and the higher up you go, the more worthy the cause. I don't know how to say this. A little bit more challenging it is. So the first magnitude level is to take Globe at Night data yourself during both campaigns. If you would do that, that would be great. And then the limiting magnitude 2 level is to teach and encourage children and adults to take Globe at Night measurements. And number 3 is to do that sort of in a more formal attitude by to become a local coordinator that would work with people at either a star party or in a classroom or 2 or 3, or with visitors at a local park, if that's what you already do, on their participation in the Globe at Night program. Level 4, limiting magnitude 4, has you do the Dark Skies Rangers activities with students if you so choose. to teach them about light pollution issues and lighting responsibly. Limiting Magnitude 5 has you use the Globe at Night data with other data sets, if that interests you. And then Limiting Magnitude 6 would be to work with the IDA, the International Dark Sky Association, in preserving dark skies. And, of course, Limiting Magnitude 7, which is, you know, exponentially dark, is to do the whole enchilada. Okay. And like Ken had said at the very beginning of the call, we have the Globe at Night campaign, two campaigns, I should say, from February 21st to March 6th for both the northern and southern hemispheres. We use Orion as the main constellation that can be seen all over the world. And, of course, at that time, the moon is not out in the early evening. We don't want a natural light bulb in the sky, so we choose to do it then. And then for our compadres in the southern hemisphere, we had to do a second set of dates because basically school does not start until March 1st in most southern hemisphere countries. So we chose to do a second campaign, too. For the southern hemisphere, it's March 24th to April 6th, and they can either use Leo or Crux. Most people in the southern hemisphere really do prefer to use Crux. It's more distinguishable. And then for the northern hemisphere, at almost the same time, but it's March 22nd to April 4th, we use Leo. And I hope you will all join in and participate. Just take a few minutes to participate in the campaign at least. Now, on one of the final pages here, number 33, we have further information for you, which consists of some websites of interest. And there you'll notice the Facebook page we have, the Twitter page we have, our old Globe at Night network there that you would want to probably look over. And if you're interested in the activities, it's on that Dark Skies Rangers webpage. And then the pièce de résistance is the globeatnight.org/web app. But if you are really an aficionado and you would rather use one of these sophisticated QR codes, I give you in the notes of the PowerPoint here how to get a free barcode for either an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry, and you can use that barcode there and swipe it with your cell phone and go right to the web page. I don't know. Some people like to do that, and I give them the option. I won't say any more. and then there's my contact information, and I usually respond pretty much right away, so feel free to contact me. And the last page has basically our sponsors and collaborators. And thank you so very much. It's strange for me. I usually like to have people interrupt and ask me questions along the way. So for me to do a solo, you know, kind of presentation is a little different for me. But
well,
thank you for your patience,
your Q&A,
and I welcome questions.
Just as a reminder, on slide 33, those are all linked on our download page, so make sure you go there. Well, thanks very much, Connie. Gabrielle, if you would please open it up for questions, and then we'll be able to answer some of our Night Sky Network members' questions for them.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, press *1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. Again, if you would like to ask a question, press *1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. One moment, please, for our first question. First question comes from Sarah Mockers. Thank you. Your line is open.
Connie, thanks for a great presentation. We've been participating in the in this campaign for several years now. I have a question. In the fall, there was a similar campaign. How does that work with your campaign, or are they totally different?
Oh, it's basically the same campaign. How this all started is a few years back, Globe the institution that does a lot of environmental kind of programs with different countries around the world. They're stationed in Boulder. They saw our little project we had in Tucson and La Serena, Chile, and they offered to put it online. And we couldn't say no. You know, how could you say no to that? And it was because of that that it became global.
Okay, no problem.
And a few years later, they did a second one, and that's the one you see in the fall. So it's the same sort of procedure. And
okay.
Yeah. Did I answer your question?
Yep.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Patrick O'Brien. Your line is open.
Well, hello, Connie.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, sir.
Okay, well, I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska, and I'm a member of the Darien O'Brien Astronomy Club in Lakewood, Colorado. And my question is, do you know if there's any participation with GLOBE at night at the congressional level, like legislatures and all that kind of stuff? Because that's the way that I was thinking was the way to go.
That is a wonderful idea. We have colleagues of ours out there in the IDA office that's just been in existence for less than 2 years now. I can talk with him and see how we could make that possible, perhaps. That is a very good idea. So what you're thinking, once we get them to participate, it might help change things?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that idea. I'm going to write that down right now.
Well, do that, because that's the way to go, in my estimation.
You got it.
Well, thanks a lot, Connie.
Thank you, and I admire the work you do.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Skip Bird. Your line is open.
Hi, Skip. Gabrielle, I don't think his line's open.
Mr. Bird, please check your mute button. Your phone may be muted.
Now, can you hear me?
How are you?
Okay, good.
All
sorry.
Right, Skip.
Had the mute button on.
Must be the snow.
Must be the snow. No snow yet. I had a question. I don't know if it's for you, Connie, or for Ken, but you mentioned the Dark Sky Rangers a couple of times. Where is that at? I must have missed it somewhere along the way.
Well, right now, it's probably going to move to GLOBE at night, but right now it's at www.darkskiesawareness.org.
Okay.
Then you say / Dark Skies Rangers.
All right.
That used to be the IYA Dark Skies Cornerstone website.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, because you mentioned it a couple of times, and I was going, well, I don't see it anywhere.
Well, it was on the top of the page, actually, on at least one of the slides.
And
slide 33 as well.
And skip on the downloads page. It's the very last link.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you could just click on that.
Download for the
Dark Sky.
Oh, there
region.
It is. Yep. Yeah, I see it way down there at the bottom. I hadn't scrolled down far enough. Okay.
And if you know Andy Fracknoy from he's from ASP, the father of Project Astro.
Mm-hmm.
He's creating a new DVD for the universe at your fingertips, and he's put at least two of the Dark Sky Ranger activities in that new DVD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of an honor.
Well, good. I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but I'm getting ready to do a training program at the Maryland Science Center.
Good.
It's an overnight sleepover for astronomy for the teachers of Baltimore City. And that's in February, so that'd be just in time for to cover the GLOBE at night stuff.
Well, email me. We can talk about it and see how I might help you.
Okay. All right. I'll do that. I'll email you here when we get done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Skip.
Our next question comes from Darien O'Brien. Your line is open.
Hello, Connie and Ken. This is Darien O'Brien from Lakewood, Colorado, and I appreciate your conversation and discussion this evening. I had a question. We've participated in the last couple of years on this, and I was downloading the information off of the website that you mentioned, and I had a question for the earlier years, 2008, 2007, 2006. The KMZ file that's available to use with Google Maps is the full data set, whereas in 2009 and 10, it looks as if you've separated out the Orion observations from the SQM observations. And I just wondered if you have a complete set of data for the 2009 and 10 that would be the both of those together.
Well, I think that would just be merging the two data sets if you so choose.
So in other words, turning them both on in Google?
Oh, yeah. You could
okay.
do that.
Okay.
You could do
kind of
multiple
nice
years.
You separated out the 2 years, but the previous years, it's just it looks like the full data set, which I would think would be both the Orion as well as the SQM. Is that correct?
Yeah. If you look at even the 2009 data, I bet you I'd have to relook at it myself. But I, you know, sometimes you get both in one line.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
It says,
because you know the person
the
who submitted
data
the data set? Submitted both at once.
Okay.
So I'd have to relook at that for you, or if you want to just look yourself, you might notice that. And the SQM might have just been separated just because some people just want to look at the SQM data.
And that
well, actually that brings
more
up a good
data. Is that right?
I'm sorry. Which question should I take here?
Ken's first.
I'm sorry, Darian. But that brings up a good point. When you submit, you want them separate, most likely, right? Each.
No. Actually, yeah. When you submit a measurement, you're looking at the same time from the same location, and
right.
On the report page, it has a place for both.
Oh, right. To do visual mm-hmm. and SQM.
Right.
Okay.
Go ahead, Darian.
And then
sorry.
The only other question is when you unzip those, the default name is doc.kml, and so what I've been doing is renaming it to like, you know, the Global Observation Network 2008_Orion or SQM, and that way when you pull them into Google Earth, then you can separate out which is the Orion observations versus the digital observations. Is
you
that...
might look at that because it might be peculiar to your machine. When I download it, the name stays.
Oh, okay, because mine
yeah.
keeps them all the same. I just didn't know if that was a artifact of the zip function or not. But it's no problem. I just rename it, and then I pull it up in Google Earth. But I'm like you. It's like, wow, is this ever impressive? And you could spend hours analyzing and comparing years to years. And I'm also interested to see our observations where they ended up being plotted on the map. And
mm-hmm.
then at the end of the day, I always wonder, where's the best place to bring our telescope so we can find a nice dark sky
mm-hmm.
area
mm-hmm.
when we really want to do some detailed astronomy?
Well, thank you for that supportive comment.
Yep. Great work. Thanks, Connie. And thanks, Ken. Nice hearing from you tonight.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Darian.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Stuart Myers. Your line is open.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I hope you're going to be. Hope you're feeling. You'll recover soon from that cold you have.
Thank you.
Now, I was wondering though if I haven't heard any light pollution organizations decide to pursue this from the property tax budget angle, because a lot of towns and stuff are pretty strapped for money. And I know in my state anyway, the property taxes are a big issue. And I've never heard any light pollution advocates say anything about suggesting, you know, like streetlight curfews or maybe just shutting the darn things off as a means of saving money for the town.
Actually, there has been some stuff. Well, the one that comes to mind, though, actually, I think was from England in the recent articles that some people were questioning the wisdom of the city to turn off the lights to save money because they were afraid of the issues of, you know, the crime going up, which there's been studies to show that doesn't happen.
No.
But the city was doing it just because of that very reason.
Yeah, no, I mean that, but you haven't heard any more, you don't hear much about the light pollution advocacy movement pushing for it, though. Because as I say, in the, you're here in the new, well, I don't know if you, what the situation's like where you are, but in this neck of the country, you hear about towns having to lay off X number of people and all
right.
this just to meet the budget, and then the governor's putting in a budget cap, although it's not a very hard cap, like they have, say, over at the NBA, but, and then towns are moaning about that, and...
Are you in a position to actually do something with your town legislation
no.
like that?
No, but I do read quite a bit. That's why I
oh,
say
yeah.
I know about the
know would
what's
you be,
going on
you,
in the politics and stuff.
Right.
Do,
do you think that you'd be wanting to do something like that, though? I mean, that sounds like you know what to do. And
if I had the pulse, that's the thing. I don't really have the pulse. I tried using... politics to deal with another astronomical issue and did not meet with great success, put it that way.
Mm-hmm, I'm sorry. Well, I can look up what's happening with IDA. They are the ones that really know those types of issues. I'm sure things are being done, and we just have, like you said, we have not been hearing about them.
Although,
but, mm-hmm, go ahead.
Funny enough, the situation seems to be improving in my town for some odd reason.
Well, I can tell you that over, I think it might be the last 2 years. Let me see if I can find something here. I'm not finding it exactly right here, but I had some hardcore numbers that there's like 300 communities over the last couple of years, either counties or towns or cities of the sort, have actually... submitted legislation to change either lighting ordinances or you know things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
and a number of those, like there's been 18 at least active states, and there's been a number of regulations made in most of those in various cities. So I think things are going on. I just don't know any specific
mm-hmm.
examples for you right
yeah,
now.
Well, I think it's been a help too. Is that in my town anyway? A number of businesses. Have
mm-hmm.
been turning off their illuminated signs when they close.
Mm-hmm.
A number of businesses. In fact, I think even the Lowe's hardware place, they've been shutting off their parking lot lights.
Yep, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, it could be explain the proof, because occasionally I can see a trace of the Milky Way. Usually the part where it runs through Cygnus and Cassiopeia, when the that part of the is at the highest in the sky.
Now, what I would say is
looks like an enhancement of sky brightness. You don't really see, you know, the detail. It just looks like an enhanced section of sky brightness.
Well, if you want to help, Steve, it might be good to have a star party and have a number of your colleagues come and the public come and have the newscast come and kind of talk about these issues.
Yeah, well...
That's one way you might want to get involved.
Yeah, unfortunately, attracting the news people to astronomical events, well, it's much easier said than done. My club has tried that. We've been barking up that tree for quite some time, actually.
Well, here's a good event for you. The whole month of April, this is something else I'm involved with, but enjoyably... there's something called the Global Astronomy Month that's going to take place all over the world. We're going to have a number of activities going on, some of which will be dark skies oriented, and some of which focus on things like the moon or other topics. So if you Google Global Astronomy Month, you'll find the website, and you can register an activity there and make it a media event. Okay?
Okay, I'll pass the word on to the club, and we'll see what will come of it.
Well, I think that's great. Thanks for talking with us.
All right.
If you go to Astronomers Without Borders,
mm-hmm.
it's all one word,
yeah.
You'll be able to find it from there.
Heard of it.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from Marie Lott. Your line is open.
Hi, I just have a quick question. I was wondering when the family packets and the teacher packets for 2011 would be online right now.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I am so sorry. we had a glitch in them. We actually had them online for a while.
Okay.
And I'm working on them next.
Okay.
They're almost done. And okay. There's just one more thing I have to do to them, and then they'll be online. And I'm betting, I'm hoping that, like, by the end of the day on Monday, they might be online.
Okay, I'm giving it training sessions for about 25 to 50 Girl Scout leaders this weekend. So I just wanted
oh my gosh.
To hand them out. But
would you do me a favor?
Yes.
Please email me.
Okay.
Tonight.
And
okay.
You're from the Charlie Elliott chapter, right?
Right, at the Atlanta Astronomy Club. Yes.
I have to, I'll also talk with you about the efforts we're doing here in Tucson with the Saguaro Council here. And they have taken it. We're actually in a book. That they have one of their pathway books. There's a couple pages on light pollution because it's like an energy book,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about GLOBE at night, and they're hoping to make it a national program.
Great.
For Girl Scouts.
For Girl Scouts. So
that's
thank you
exciting.
So much, Marie.
Yes,
I'm going to write your name
I'm
down right
tomorrow,
now, and I'm going to expect an email from you.
For this weekend leader retreat, so we've got 156 leaders coming. And so I've got two stargazing sessions with lots of handouts, and I was going to talk to them about GLOBE at night, too.
So this is Saturday?
Friday and Saturday.
Ooh, what time on Friday? What time tomorrow?
It'll be in the evening, 8:30.
But it is tomorrow evening, though.
Yeah, yes, it
okay,
is.
Okay.
I'll be without Internet after about noon, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
it's all right. I can just tell them to check the website, you know, because it's cost me a lot of money to print out all these things. So I printed out all your flyers. So I'll just give them the information and tell them to check.
I'm so sorry. So I'll email me tonight and I'll email you back.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Marie. I'm sorry.
All righty. No problem. Bye.
Well, you know, speaking about handouts, will you have the postcards again that we can hand out at star parties, Connie?
I have them printed already.
Perfect.
Yeah. Did you need me to send you some or what?
Yeah, send me, you know, a gross. They'll go out. You know they'll go out.
Okay, postcards.
I can send them out with the pins, with the award pins. Perfect.
Oh, that'd be great. All right.
Send them.
So we'll talk offline about that too,
yeah,
Pam, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great. Go ahead.
Any more questions?
Our next question comes from Gloria Hardrick-Ewing. Your line is open.
Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Walker, for the presentation. It was excellent. This is my first time participating in this program. I have participated in GLOBE before with my classroom. But my question is about the researcher's book you mentioned earlier. Could you repeat the author's names again, please?
Yes, ma'am. It's Travis Longcore, like Longcore.
Okay.
And Catherine, with a C, Rich, R-I-C-H.
Okay, I'll try to find that.
Thank you
so much, and I hope you get better soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Our next question comes from Joan Chamberlain. Your line is open.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, Joan.
Hi,
Joan.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing okay.
One of my questions is this, you know, the session that's March 22nd to April 4th
mm-hmm.
and March 24th to April 6th,
mm-hmm.
Where you use Leo or crux, depending on what hemisphere. Are you going to have those limiting magnitude maps for those
yes.
constellations online?
Yes, ma'am, we are. They're all the text is all done. The slots where the images go are all done. The images are done, but I have to put them into the slots. It has to be the right images in, you know, the right places. So we have many iterations this year, as you can well imagine.
Wow.
Due to the number of constellations and the number of campaigns. So it's almost there. It's just a matter of getting the graphics person to do something. And our main graphics person is not here this month. That was part of the delay. So we have a sliver of a second person, and I'm at her whim, basically.
And will there also be that little like quiz thing that you like you have for Orion, where you can go through and... You know what I'm talking about?
I do, I do. I love that little quiz. This year, probably not. As you might know, we're limited to like 1.5 people for all of Globe at Night. But that's not quite true. We have outside help on things like the help desk when people call in for questions. Globe has been wonderful, and Globe also helps market the campaign worldwide. But and Esri helps at the back end. But as far as the other aspects of Globe at Night, there's only less than a couple of us on the project.
Okay.
So we, and we also have full-time jobs.
Right. Well, will there be, like, either a family packet or a student packet or something
like
that?
Yes, ma'am. There'll be a family packet and a teacher packet for every situation, and they're almost done.
Oh, great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Joan, and thank you for all the work you do.
Oh, thanks.
I also want to mention that if you go to urbanwildlands.org, you'll be able to find that Ecological Consequences of Artificial Night Lighting by Catherine Rich and Travis Longcore.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question comes from Tom Dorsey. Your line is open.
Hello, Connie.
Hi.
I'm way up here in the northwestern corner of the United States, and we're having we have weather problems up here for our club. Mm-hmm. And the main question I wanted to ask, I've originally formerly lived down in the Santa Clara Valley, down around San Jose, or San Francisco, and I'm quite interested in the Lick Observatory up on Mount Hamilton. And I spent a lot of time up there while I was living in the area. And according to this topic tonight, the light pollution, we almost lost it a few years back. They were threatening to move off the mountain. And I was wondering if you've heard any of the latest status of the conditions there at the observatory.
Unfortunately, no, I have not.
Because
not for that particular observatory at all.
Mm-hmm.
What's the normal way that you hear about them, about the status?
Well,
do you usually have people you know there, or is there a local newspaper that usually...
In particular, I spent a couple of overnight sessions with a couple of the resident astronomers, and they've since moved on. And the observatory is now operated by the UC Santa Cruz, University of California system, and they take care of that. And the last I've heard is that they've got 9 active scopes up there, including the big Shane Hale 120-inch. And at one time, they were threatening to move all of that off to a southwestern site. And they've since had discussions with the city of San Jose, especially, and the Bay Area, because the light pollution there was just getting something awful.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Thomas, could I interject here for just a second? Because
yes.
A little local knowledge. I just happen to be a member of one of the clubs. Is the San Jose Astronomical Society.
Yes.
And I don't know if you remember Jim Van Nuelen, but he was very active in working on light pollution in the city of San Jose, and it's getting better.
Well, I am so happy to hear that. I was down there last summer to a school reunion in Saratoga.
Right.
And I had a chance to just go up there briefly and to see how things were going. And I understand they've installed additional remote scopes up there.
Yeah. Extra solar planet hunting scopes.
Extra solar system up there, which I'm really, really partially interested in. I'm really interested in that. And but I couldn't spend too much time up there because I was on a time schedule. And it looked like it was a thriving community up there, but...
Well, just to let you know that in the San Francisco Bay Area, we're working very hard to control light pollution.
On the control.
That truly is wonderful news.
Certainly wonderful news, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much, Connie, for this wonderful presentation tonight. And
well, thank you, Tom.
I hope you get much better from your cold.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our last question comes from Thea Remakers. Your line is open.
Connie and Ken, that's me again. I got a last question. I was just looking at slide 31 where you list the globe at night needs you to, and then you have your seven magnitude items. In the drawing that you're going to have at the end of the campaigns, I presume that the events that would be taken before the campaign takes place, in other words, to get kids involved and make them aware of that, those events would also be included in that drawing?
I would say yes.
Okay,
yes.
Just wanted to just double check.
Yes, sir. Thank you for asking.
Okay, Marie.
Okay, we want to thank again Dr. Connie Walker for her always excellent presentation, and thanks to you folks for doing all you do at the Night Sky Network. Remember, these two events, they'll be February 21st through March 6th, and then again March 22nd through April 4th. And our next telecon is Thursday, March 24th, with Dr. Carolyn Crow at UCLA on Views from the Epoxy Mission, Colors in Our Solar System, on Searching for Extrasolar Planets. So stay tuned. Thanks, everyone, and good night.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks again, Connie.
Thank you, too, Ken. Bye, Jessica.
Thank you, Connie.
Thank you, Gabriel. Gabrielle, is it?
It's Gabrielle, yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And this concludes tonight's call. You may disconnect at this time.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for hanging in there.